accession number 18456, Reel 1.
George Ponsford, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
I was born in Portsea, Hampshire.
Which year was this?
Place called Blossom Alley in 1924.
Can you tell me when you first joined the army, please?
I joined the army when I signed on, I think it was the 5th, the 11th, 1942. And they called me into the army January 21st, 1943.
So, were you in Portsmouth during the Blitz?
Yes.
Can you tell me what you remember of the bombing of Portsmouth, please?
Oh, I cannot remember. I remember I was in the pictures down by Commercial Road, and there was this almighty bang, and a bloody wall shook, coming in, neck with an arm on the floor. There's all these sailors running over the top of me. I was only 15, 16. You know, all trying to get out. And when we did get out, I see a woman running up the road on fire. I was only a young lad, and they bombed daylights out of us.
Did anybody do anything for the woman?
Oh yeah, they put her out, yeah. They put the fire out, but, and when he was killed, I do not know.
Her clothes were on fire, were they?
Yeah, they were on fire. That was around Conway Street, all around that way, Spring Street.
What was the building that was hit?
It was old houses. They dropped a landmine. Houses. And I think it was terrible, horrible, naughty, but what they'd done afterwards, it got rid of the slums. You know, you've got to look at it that way as well, because our houses, where I lived in Portsea, we were running alive with lice, bugs. Your bed was crisscross straps, if you get what I mean. They had straps that way and straps that way, so like a mesh. And you put cardboard down, and if you had a mattress, you were lucky. Coats.
And was Conway Street in Portsea?
That was down Charlotte Street way. It was all around that area.
What was your address in the Blitz?
I was living at 97 Hillsey Crescent, just before you get onto the outskirts of Portsmouth.
Hillsey Crescent is in Portsea, is it?
No, it's in Portsmouth. Just as you go into Portsmouth. If you get what I mean. You go over the bridge and then Hillsey is on the right-hand side.
Did any bombs fall near your house?
The only bomb, none exploded in our area, but they did drop one, and I was standing in a doorway with a girl called Doddle Gates, you know, we brought up together. We had this almighty whistle, and we dived. Laid flat, but it never went off. And when they dug it up, it was a massive bomb, unexploded, right by Port's Bridge. And what I couldn't understand, they built Paul's Bridge there, and they said, well, if that bridge gets hit, we've got to have another one. So what they done, built another one alongside of it. And somebody said, well, that's bloody stupid. If that one gets hit, that one's going to go up with it. So they built one, 400 or 500 yards up the seashore, put one across there, you know.
Was the Blitz a frightening experience for you?
It was terrible. It frightened me to death. It's no good saying it. It don't, because it does. When we used to run out and pick the shrapnel up, I thought it was great. But when you see the houses all smashed up and people we knew had gone, you know, your streets all broken up and smashed up. And I've seen New York Germans come over. I worked for a firm called Waring at the time. Sirens went and these bombers come over. We got a little airport down at Portsmouth. You see the bombers leave the plane. he didn't know what to expect.
Did you use shelters?
Pardon?
Did you use air raid shelters?
Yes, we skipped any old air raid shelters, you know, especially when the sirens went. You had the Anderson shelter, which was a godsend to the country. You had the brick shelter. And if you got it, well, you didn't know nothing about it anyway. You were gone.
What was public morale like under the bombing?
All right. Everybody was so sociable, different to what it is now. It was fantastic.
What did people feel like about the German air crews who were carrying out the bombing?
Well, they never said a lot, you know, because we had I could always remember Mrs. Colborne. They would never get over it. Next minute they're over. You know, you got the odd swear word and all this business, which is natural. But there you go.
And do you remember any particular buildings and streets that were hit in Portsmouth?
Oh, a lot of them. They hit the cinema at Lake Road. Quite a few people killed there. They hit a couple of railway shelters. People were killed outright in them, direct hits. Hell of a lot of people, but you can't remember them all because it was a long time ago.
Now, you served in the army in the Second World War.
Yes.
Were you a conscript or a volunteer?
I volunteered.
So, when did you come out of the army?
I came out 1946, and as I said, I couldn't settle. I got released, I was out in Benghazi at the time, I got released as a bricklayer. I couldn't even lay the bloody table, let alone a brick. I've never laid a brick in my life. Put me out on a Class B release. And after several jobs and threats from the people down at Labour Exchange, you'll have this job or else. You know, I thought, well, if it's going to be or else, I've been out there fighting for you, mate. I just got older one. And I was ready to give them a smack. And that was the attitude of them people in there, you know. And you get fed up with it. You have enough from your NCOs shouting and bawling all the time. And you come home and you find this lot, you know, you tell them where you got to go and what you got to do. It's a free country. That's what we fought for.
So you decided to rejoin?
Afterwards, I got fed up. You go on the buildings. I had no trade because the war came along and it stopped. Well, I wouldn't have had a trade because my mother wanted us out. Work, money, that's all she thought about. I hated her. And I still do. My father, a lot of respect. But I never had a trade. Couldn't do anything else. So I went back in the army and I missed some bloody good mates. And I must say that the Gloucester Regiment is the best regiment I've ever been in because the discipline was a bit off right. You were told not to do this, but you weren't threatened. If you get what I mean?
Yes.
With the others, you're under King's rules and Queen's rules and regulations from the time you get up in the morning, the time you went to bed.
Which regiments had you been in the Second World War?
I've been in the Hampshire Regiment and West Kent.
And when did you rejoin the army?
I rejoined 7th of November 1947.
Was it easy to get back in?
Yeah, it did easy. Come in, George. Yeah, I went back in. I mean, I've got no crime record or anything like that. I mean, straight to die.
So you went straight into the Gloucesters?
No, I went back into the Hampshires at Winchester. Then they sent us to Bulford. Then what happened there? I just don't know. I used to have a catapult, because he had all these wild cats hanging around. And you had to knock them off. 9 times out of 10 I missed. Evidently, one went right through. And a mirror went, you know, the dress mirrors if you forget in the army?
Yes.
Well, we had one of them, I was a storming in Bulford, and was up against the wall. And it slid down. I thought, hello, I'm going to get the can back here, because I've got a catapult. And I ran out for a run, 5 mile run with Sergeant Petts, come back, the mirror's all over the floor. I'm gonna get the blame for this. Next thing I knew, I'm on a posting to the Gloucester Regiment in Jamaica, and that's where I stayed. I never stayed in Jamaica all the time.
But did you get the posting because of the smash mirror?
I don't think so. It just went through my mind. They're probably short of men.
When did you go to Jamaica to join the Gloucesters?
Oh, that was about maybe January, February 1948, something like that. And I had a lovely company commander called me for a better bloke.
Who was he?
Farrer Hockley.
Why was he so good to you?
He was good to. He was a very fair man. He was fair. He respected what you'd done, he'd give you a ticking off, he was in the wrong. If I never had a shave in the morning, he sponsored, you should set an example to these young lads, you know, you have a little bit of beard on there. And he sent me down a gully, he knew what he was doing, he knows I liked ice cream and that was it.
What's the gully?
Gully, down the ship's gully. Gully, yeah, down the cookhouse. He knew that I liked a bit of ice cream, but as a man, he was great. I respected him. Then,
what was it like serving in Jamaica?
All right. I was a battalion. Farrell Rockley made me up battalion sports storeman. I was with a fella called Georgie Soames. Poor old Georgie must be dead and gone now. And we had a couple of laughs, you know. They brought some brand new rugby gear. In them days, you had the shorts, you had to just come out like that. I don't even know it. The old stuff.
Rather baggy.
Yeah, and old George was lying in bed and he set a bloody lot of light. And then Farrer come up to me and he said, "Oh, Ponsford, there's a coloured gentleman coming up," he said. "Please show him up to my office." He's fetching some cricket gear up. Anyway, he came up, I took him up to the office, I said, "Sir, the coloured gentleman's outside." And Farrer said, "No need to call him a coloured gentleman, you know." I suppose he was just joking, but I took it literally. So, and he said, "Ponsford, I want all them bets with that
table tennis?"
"Didn't you know?" He said, "Cover them, smother them." I slung them in a bath full of oil, you know, the lot. Pushed them under. 2 hours later, they come and get them for a game of cricket. And you should have seen their whites when they came back, all covered with oil. But I had a lot of respect for Farrell Rockley. No getting away from that at all. Next thing I knew, Ponsford, you're going to Bermuda. I said, "What a disgusting place." And they sent me out there.
Was it disgusting?
No, beautiful. No, that is my sense of humour, you know. He sent me out to Jamaica.
With the rest of the battalion?
No, it was only a detachment, I think, about 13 of us. And a few more people from different regiments. And it was glorious. My life consisted out there in fishing, off the rocks, catching big gropers and yellowtails and all that, you know, and we looked after the laundry, we had our own laundry up there. He said, "We'll put it in and wash them out," and he had to iron them, it didn't take long. National game out there was bingo. Or housey. And I could always remember we went to a place called The Hub with a fellow called David Knox. He was a cook, caterer side. And we've had a few drinks at The Hub. I'll tell you if you want to know this. We've had a few, and of course, all gherkins and bits of cheese and all this lark. And we were topped up, tanked up. Anyway, he brought it all up outside in the gutter. He said, I've lost my teeth. And I got my hand down it, and I found him, and I stuck him straight back in his mouth. You know, this is what we miss, all the good laughs.
But did you have any soldiering duties in Bermuda?
Yeah, we done a bit of fire picket and the occasional parade to let the people know that we are alive. The Americans were amazed how we managed to slope arms, shoulder arms, present arms, all on the beat of a drum. Nobody was shouting orders. But were they had any respect for us or not, I do not know.
Was there ever any trouble in Bermuda?
Put it this way. The whites didn't like the coloureds, and the coloureds didn't like the whites. And if you went into a coloured shop or bar, you wouldn't get served. Irrespective of whether you were a soldier or a white man. That was in them days. Whether it's still going on or still on, I don't know.
But was there any disturbance on the streets?
No, not as far. All I know is it was one fella got murdered. He got knifed. He was a coloured man. I think he was knifed by a fella called Fox. And because he was coloured, he got away with it. But there was a big outcry by the colours at that time about Mr. Fox getting away with it, and they whipped him back in again, and they charged him with grievous bodily harm and giving 3 years. That's not a lot, is it, for a man's life? Whether he's coloured or not, he's got a right to live as well as what we have.
Which years were you in Bermuda, do you think?
1948. So at the end of 49, I had 2 or 3 fights out there.
What kind of fights?
Boxing.
Boxing bouts?
Yeah. I fought Wally Wall of Bermuda. According to the local press and the radio was run by Jerry Wilmot. Ever heard of Jerry? You haven't. BBC war correspondent, he's the only man who could read out the news without making a mistake.
Oh yes, I have heard of him, yeah.
And he was, they call him gay now, don't they? Anyway, all what, is, what this war was going to do to me and all that, anyway, I beat him hands down. And the next one I fought was Sonny DeCosta from Portugal. Well, he was a Bermudian anyway, lived there. Beat him.
What weight did you box at?
Welter, light welter. Well, welterweight in them days. There was no light welters and with welters. It was just, if you was a welterweight coming their class, you was welterweight.
What's this, about 10 stone, is it?
10 stone two, yeah. And the next one I fought was a fella called Larry Reese from Boston, Massachusetts. And I wasn't in his class, put it that way. I hit him with such a right hand, he just stood there and laughed at me. I thought, oh dear. And I got turned over.
And how did you come to get your posting to Korea then?
Well, we came home on leave, and as the year I married a wife, no, I was courting a wife, we went into a cinema in London, the news centre, Bathy News. And we see it on the news, it's Korea. I said, thank God I'm not out there, because I don't want to know. You know, you've seen enough. Anyway, when we get tied up, we got married, and then 10 days after that, I'm on embarkation leave. No, I went out 10 days after I got married. All the regiment went out there.
Is this in 1950?
Yeah. And I got put on a charge on a boat, although I was an NCO, for carrying an offensive weapon.
What was that?
A Gurkha knife. Now then, can you explain to me what is the difference between an offensive weapon, a Bren gun, sting gun, hand grenades? And my company commander at the time was Watkin Williams. He just threw the case out.
Why did you have a Gurkha knife?
Well, it's always handy because you put it on your gear, and if you're in the front line, you got little trees and you got to chop the branches off and all this business. I thought it was great, but the first swipe I had, the handle fell off, so that was no good.
Where did you get it from? Where did you get it from?
I haven't got a clue. No, I have not got a clue. Probably bought it off one of the boys. There's plenty about you get with car boot sales and all now.
And that charge that was dismissed was aboard the ship, was it?
It was just chucked out. He said, hey, can it be an offensive weapon when he's got submachine guns? We got 4.5 mortars, everything on the boat. You're carrying live rounds in your pocket, in your pouch.
But that was aboard the ship going to Korea?
Yeah.
What was the voyage like?
The voyage? It was all right, not too bad. It was a windrush. You know, she was up and down, up and down. I've been on that tour 3 times. And every time she left port, she's supposed to caught fire. Eventually she did, didn't she?
What were conditions aboard the ship like?
Not too bad, not too bad at all. I mean, I've been in worse.
Which platoon and company of the Glossers were you in?
I was with B Company, and I cannot tell you what platoon or what section. I was a corporal with B Company, and we had a great bunch of lads. And I still miss them, you know.
Who was in charge of B Company?
At the time, it was Watkin Williams. Then, after that, Major Harding. Dennis Harding. Did you interview him? Well, he won't now. He's dead, ain't he? I made up the colonel. Then we had another one, Captain Morris. Old Jolly Bill Morris. I can always remember him. We had a... Because you always... If you're up the line and you come out, you still have to do your manoeuvres. Because practice makes perfect. And at the time, you don't realise, but they're doing it for your good, to save life. If they say, find a little furrow on the ground, you find one, you get in there quick. And it's in your mind, and it comes automatic when you're diving. If you roll over to somewhere and find it. Anyway, we went out on a little march, and we had this Sergeant Stevens. He got killed. And Sergeant Stevens... we'd done this little march, and old Morris come round, big Bill, Jolly Bill, and how's your feet? You had a foot inspection. And he said to the sergeant, my feet hurts. He said, I should think so. You got your bloody boots on the wrong feet. He'd done about 8 miles. That was Bill. He was like that. But I understand Sergeant Stevens was in our lorry when we was pulling out, and he jumped into a Bren gun carrier. But it's warm in them, you get in there. And it went over a bridge. And I understand he got cut in half, I don't know, I can't verify it.
And can you remember arriving in Korea?
Yes, we arrived in Korea at Busan. The Americans come out with their razzmatazz with the band. We didn't like it. Well, I don't know. I like your military music, you know. Then, on board ship, we had the fairies, if you get what I mean, the gay boys.
In the ship?
Yeah, they were Merchant Navy. Most of your Merchant Navy people, not all of them, but they are gay. There's one bloke there called Flo. He stood on the hatchway with his handkerchief crying his eyes out, and he was singing to us, "Now is the hour we must say goodbye," and he cried his eyes out. We got a laugh.
Did he have any boyfriends?
I should imagine so.
Did they...
Not me, mate. I couldn't entertain that.
Did the gays interfere with the soldiers at all?
Well, let's say they're opportunists. There's no good them talking to me, of course. No ways. I mean, I've got an answer for that, but I don't know where I'm allowed to say it, am I?
Say what?
Well, when the gays approach me, I'll turn around and say, "I ain't no good, I bumped me bloody grub." Get off.
So you got this reception from the American band?
Pardon?
You got the reception from the American band?
Yes, yes, we got played in there. And I still say that the army, they should have given us gas masks. Because the stench in Korea was terrible. Everywhere you went is where people have been crapping here. They had no toilets. It was vile. Well, they call it a bloody arsehole of the East, don't they? I don't know if you've heard that expression, have you?
Yes.
And I will say this. The women out there, they're the most ugliest things I've seen in my life. But after 3 months out there and a couple of brown eyes, they look like film stars.
What happened once you got off at Pusan?
We got off at Pusan and we went to different transit camps. We went up someplace and... It's a long jog. I know that we went up to towards the Yellow River, and all we see was these lorries coming back, bumper to bumper, all the way. And you see the Turkish army coming back with all the reds wrapped up and all that.
And all the what?
Heads, you know, with bandages, they've been wounded, and there were some old soldiers. And I could always remember looking down and thought, what the hell are they pulling out for? Because we didn't know, none of us. And next minute somebody said, "George, you're on fire." And I'm a light, because the clothes they give us were so flimsy, it was a camouflage suit. And a little bonfire coming, I must have stood near it and it ignited. And I couldn't even feel it, it was so cold. So they're going to get it unlocked somewhere. Now the Turks are called hard soldiers. Joe Kahn, he said, "This will be finished at the political table." He knew. He said, "But these are only little people, rebel." Well, they were, but there was masses of them. And Joe, he was a gentleman. He used to come round with his pipe, cool, calm and collected, never fluttered at all. Then we took up several positions. One officer said to me, I won't name him, because a couple of Koreans had been shot, Corporal Ponce.